Appreciate the presence of each one. We're going to begin with just a few minutes of drill questions. And so we'll start with number one. And if you're over 15, don't answer. How many divisions in the Bible? Well, let's try that again. How many divisions in the Bible? Who said two? All right. Good. Thank you, sir. That's right. Old Testament and New Testament. All right. Okay. We'll let you answer the next question. How many authors wrote the Bible? 40. About 40. That's right. And about how many years did it take to write it?
About 1,500
years. Very good. All right. Good. And anyone, when was the first book written?
1450.
About 1450, 1500 B.C. The last book? You can add, subtract. You got that one?
65 to 90.
About in 70s to 90. You can say 55, but it's 70s to 90s A.D. Some think Revelation is in the 70s, some think in the 90s. So that gives you your 1,500 years. All right, I'm going to ask John Michael a question. John Michael, does your dad ever have any expectations of you as to things you ought to do?
Yes,
okay. And if you fulfill those expectations, can you expect his favor?
Yes.
And if you do not fulfill those expectations, can you expect some consequences? Yes. Okay, and so that's his plan for you. Now, what can that be called?
My dad's dispensation.
Your dad's dispensation. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Look on your notes, on the footnotes, on the first lesson. There's further definition about the word, further study on dispensation. You'll see about four lines from the bottom of the first paragraph. There's a little statement there, how a man manages his house and dispenses his blessings. If you'll go back up in the first lesson a little bit further, where you have the discussion of the word dispensation, you will see the word that it comes from. It's O-I-K-O-M-I-A. You'll see that on your first lesson. It's on page 8. And you'll see there it comes from two words, one that means a house, and the other word means law. So it's the law of the house. And how the master of the house decides to dispense his blessing. That's the word dispensation. Or how to administer his affairs. That's the word administration in some versions. So that's very critical to what we just prayed with Michael. That because of God's great love, we all ought to want to focus to know his will. We better prepare ourselves to serve him. And critical to that is understanding there are three major dispensations. And what are those three dispensations? What?
Patriarchal, Jewish, and Christian.
Patriarchal, Jewish, and Christian. And why do we call them that? On what basis? How they deal with the nations. I'm looking for one word. Covenants. The covenants he makes with the patriarchs. The covenants he makes with the nation of Jews or Israel. And the covenant he makes with Christians. So covenants are key. All right, what is a covenant? An agreement. That's right. And between men and men, it's an agreement between two parties. What's different about a covenant between God and man?
What God has agreed to do for man.
Exactly. What God has agreed to do for man. Okay. Let's go to lesson two. Now, here you see we got three parts to our lesson. Each one having to do with these covenants. So we start with the patriarchs. We said God made covenants with patriarchs. And what is a patriarch? father of a family, or him and his descendants is the idea. Okay. Now, turn to Genesis 6. Now, this, depending on what version of the lesson you have, that may not be on your lesson, so you may want to add this in there. Right there where I have Genesis 9 on your lesson, Noah, you may want to add what we're talking about right now. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 18. By the way, these lessons will be edited as we go through the study, and I'll be sending them to Wally, and periodically he'll upload updates. And you'll see on the web the date of the latest posting that he did. So if you're interested in that, those will be available. All right, here in chapter 6 and verse 18 is the first time you find the word covenant in the Bible. And it's a covenant with a patriarch, Noah. Note he says, I'll establish my covenant with you. You look back in verse 13. God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. So God was going to destroy everything on the earth. But he made an agreement with Noah. Here's what God agreed to do for Noah. And that is to save him and his family from that flood. But if you look down in verse 14, it's a conditional covenant. Now verse 8 shows that Noah was saved by grace. This version, New American, says favor. Some versions say grace. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Noah didn't devise the plan to save himself. It's by the grace of God. But you'll note in verse 14, it was a conditional covenant. That is, you've got to make this ark. You've got to make it the way I tell you. And then you can take your family in it and you'll be saved from the flood. So the very first time you find the word covenant in the Bible, it serves to help explain what it is. Here's what God agreed to do for Noah and his family. And you'll note, he said, verse 18, my covenant is with you. You shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wives and your sons' wives with you. And so because of their relationship with the patriarch, they shared in the benefits of the covenant, as well as the animals that he took on board. And so we commented in our last class that God might make a covenant with a person or a nation and other people are impacted. And you see that happening right here. So here's a patriarchal covenant. Now go to chapter 9. We have this one on your lesson, chapter 9, verse 18, verse 8, excuse me, through 17. And I'm not going to read all of that because we're very limited on time in our class. If you were to do Bible marking and look for a thread of words, this would be an interesting marking because you're going to find the word covenant occurring over and over and over again in this particular section. Here in chapter 9, he said, verse 11, I will establish my covenant with you. Okay, so here's what God agreed to do for Noah. And all flesh will never again be cut off by the water of the flood, neither shall there again be a flood to destroy the earth. This is the sign of the covenant which I'm making between me and you, now note, and every living creature that is with you for all successive generations. So the covenant's made with the patriarch, but those who are related to the patriarch as descendants benefit in that covenant. Who all would that include?
Everybody.
What?
Everybody.
Right? Including you. You are benefiting from that patriarchal covenant today that God made with Noah not to destroy everybody on the earth with a flood. Now you'll note he says in verse 12, this covenant has a sign. And so you look in verse 13, you see what the sign is. I'll set my bow in the cloud, it shall be a sign of the covenant. Now you may say, oh look, there's a rainbow, the covenant God made with man. That's okay. What you've done is use metonymy. Metonymy is one thing put for another. But the rainbow is not the covenant. It's a sign of the covenant. Remember we talked about with Abraham, I think we did that last week, defining a covenant where there were some lambs set aside. They were not the covenant, but the text says they were a witness to the covenant. So don't confuse the sign of the covenant with the covenant. But sometimes the sign of the covenant is called the covenant. You'll see that with circumcision, for example, or with the commandments that are conditions for a covenant, sometimes called the covenant. All right, so here's the first time we see about covenants, and we see in chapter 6 a conditional covenant. Was the covenant in chapter 9 conditional or unconditional? Unconditional. I'll never destroy the earth again. There's no commandments. There's no requirements for men to keep. That's just what God said, I'll do for man. You can see God didn't sit down at a bargaining table with man and say, here's what I'll do. What will you do? It wasn't that kind of thing. But it's called a covenant. Okay. Go to Genesis chapter 12. Now, it's good to know about the covenant in chapter 6 and the covenant in chapter 9. But there are some covenants that are extremely important. In our prayer with Michael, we talked about focusing so we could understand God's plan. That's what this Bible survey is about. And if you want to understand God's plan, there are certain covenants we really need to be familiar with. And this is one of them, the Abrahamic covenant, the covenant God made with the patriarch, Abraham. What else was Abraham called? And he's the only man called that, or the first time that word is used, it was referring to him. Hebrew. He was a Hebrew. And so his descendants were Hebrews. And so he's the patriarch. And so here in chapter 12 is when at first God appeared to Abraham in the Ur of the Chaldees. You know that, Mac 7. Told him to leave and go to the land he was showing him. He goes to Haran. His father dies. And now God appears to him again. Said, go to the land I'm going to show you. And so that's the land of Canaan, as you'll see a little bit later in the text in verse 5. But here we have this covenant God made with him in verse 1 through 3 that is extremely important. And you'll see on your lesson there's three parts to the covenant. First of all, there's a national part to that covenant. I'll make of you, verse 2, a great nation. And I'll bless you and make your name great. Not the name Abraham, but the nation that sprang from him. That's the idea. And I'll bless that nation of all the nations on the earth in a very special way. So that's one of the promises. Then you have in the last part of verse 1 an allusion to another part of that promise. He said, go to the land which I will show you. Go down to verse 7. When he got to that land, verse 7, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants, or your version may say seed, to your seed or descendants, I will give this land. So, here's the land promised to Abraham, that he and his descendants, actually it'd be his descendants. When he died, he had not one parcel of that land except what he bought for a burial ground. But he believed God's promise that his descendants would inherit that land, that is, that great nation that he had promised him. Then there's a third part of the promise, and that's down in the last part of verse 2, so you shall be a blessing, and you get that at the end of verse 3, and in you all families of the earth shall be blessed. Now note, all families, plural, all families of the earth. Are you a Hebrew? Are you part of the all families? Yes. So there's a covenant that involved this nation. But then in this covenant is a part that involves all families, a blessing. And so that's your three parts of the covenant, and that's a messianic covenant. So let's start with that one. Go to Acts chapter 3. Acts chapter 3. So we move on down the stream of time. Abraham lived about 2,000 B.C. So we move on down about 2,000 years. Peter's preaching in Jerusalem. He's preaching to descendants of Abraham. Jews, we call them. Okay? And now look down in verse 25. You are sons of the prophets. That is, you beget or receive what they talked about. You are sons of the prophets and of the covenant. There it is. Which God made with your fathers, saying to Abraham. Now he said fathers because God also repeated it to Isaac and to Jacob. But it began with Abraham, saying to Abraham, in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. What's he talking about? The Holy Spirit was guiding the pen of Moses when he recorded that covenant promise in Genesis 12. The Holy Spirit was guiding this preacher as he's saying now what it referred to. So the same mind that guided the pen of the writer of Genesis is guiding the preacher of Acts chapter 3. And so I know that this is an accurate description of what that covenant had in mind. And so verse 26, for you first, God having a God raised up his servant and sent him to bless you by turning every one of you from your wicked ways. I have other verses on the lesson. We simply don't have time to look at them. But you can read them. I encourage you to read the verses on the lesson. But you can see that that third part of that Abrahamic covenant referred to the coming Messiah. The first two. First of all, the great nation promise. Again, we don't have time to read all of those. But listen. The rest of your Bible, all the way through Malachi, is based upon this covenant. It's an unfolding of it. When you go to Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and those other books, it's an unfolding of this covenant. So if we want to understand God's plan, we need to understand this covenant. So Abraham had a son named Isaac. Isaac had a son named Jacob. Jacob had 12 boys. They became the head of 12 tribes, and they're called the 12 what? What? I can't understand you. They are called the 12 tribes of Israel, and that's a good answer. But I want to know what those 12 boys are called in Acts 7. Patriarchs. Patriarchs. The 12 patriarchs. They still don't have the land, by the way. Abraham died at 175. God made this promise when he was 75 that you read about in Genesis 12. 100 years passed. He still hadn't got the land. Isaac was born. He didn't get the land. Jacob was born. He's still not a great nation. In fact, you remember that one of Jacob's boys was carried into, sold into slavery, went over to Egypt, and there he became the ruler of Egypt. So what does all of that have to do with this? It has everything to do with this. God said, I'm going to make you a great nation. But you know what? That promise was on the verge of falling to the ground. Because Jacob and the boys left in Canaan were about to die. There was a famine. They were running out of food. They hear about a ruler in Egypt that stored up grain. He sends his boys over there, and that ruler is Joseph. Joseph then invites them to come to the land. Go to Genesis. We have it on your lesson. Genesis chapter 46 and verse 3. So finally, the daddy, Jacob, comes before Joseph. And verse 1, Israel set out with all that he had, came to Beersheba, offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And on the way here, God is talking to him. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. He said, I am God, the God of your father. So here's the idea of patriarch. The God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. So God said, I'm going to make you a great nation, but it didn't happen in Canaan. It hadn't happened yet. And so he said, I'm going to make a great nation of you in Egypt. That sets the stage for the book of Exodus. Because when you get to the book of Exodus, the people began to multiply, so much so the Pharaoh's concerned. He wants all the baby boys killed, and he raises a deliverer to deliver his people, Moses, and thus the first five books of the Bible. But it all finds its foundation back here in this covenant that God made with Abraham. I'm going to make you a great nation. All right? And then you have the second part that we talk about, the land promise. Very important. He said, I'm going to give Abraham this land of Canaan to your nation, to your descendants. You say, what does that have to do with us today? It has everything to do with it. You've heard of premillennialism, I imagine. If you turn on your television, you may hear preachers talking about Christ is coming back to the earth and there's going to be a big war, the war of Armageddon. He's going to defeat all his enemies and he's going to bring all the Jews back to Jerusalem and reign there for 1,000 years. Millennial, 1,000, pre. He's coming back before the 1,000 years. Thus the war of Armageddon. And he's going to fulfill the land promise. And the idea is the land promise was never fulfilled and God keeps his promises. So Christ is coming back. And sure enough, the Jews are going to get the fulfillment of the land promise. Look at the book of Joshua. Look in Joshua chapter 21. Joshua chapter 21. It's there on your lesson. So what was Joshua about? So Moses delivered the people from Egypt, brought them to Mount Sinai. God said, you're going to be my special nation. We'll look at that if we have time in Exodus 19. You'll be my special nation. And so Moses led them to the border of the promised land, but there he died. All right? So he didn't take them into the promised land. So God raises up another man to lead them into the promised land. Thus the story of Joshua. But this land, there's a problem. In this land, there are people, and they have cities, and they have houses, and their cities are protected by walls, and they have armies. And they're not going to give them to you. So what do you got to do? You got to go to war. But, you know, they're not nearly equipped like those folks in those places. God says, I'll give you the land. Took a man of faith named Joshua, led the people. And that's what the book of Joshua is about. The conquest of the land of Canaan. And the allotment to those 12 tribes. Now when you get to chapter 21 toward the end, this is a very important passage. Look at 21 verse 43. So the Lord gave Israel. How much of the land? All the land. Which he had sworn to give to their fathers. Where did he promise that? Genesis 12. And it says they possessed it and lived in it. Look down at verse 45. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. All came to pass. The land promise has been fulfilled. The national promise has been fulfilled. So you see on your lesson, we have the nation promise fulfilled in Joseph and Moses, the land promise fulfilled in Joshua, the spiritual promises fulfilled in Christ. So this lesson is a survey of the Bible. Get the big picture. What does Genesis 12 have to do with Acts 2? Here's the answer. Here's the answer. Even the book of Hebrews talks about, uses the imagery of, we're marching to a promised land today. And the only way we're going to get it is to have the faith to keep on keeping on. That's in chapters 3 and 4. And so there is a connection when you study Genesis with the rest of your Old Testament and with the New Testament. And thus the importance of this covenant promise. Now, go back with me to Genesis chapter 6 just a moment. Let's show how important this concept that we're presenting is. In Genesis chapter 6, it says that, verse 14, God told Noah, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Okay. Danny, have you built an ark yet? You haven't? Do you believe in God?
Yes.
Yes, you do. Do you think we ought to do what God says?
Yes.
Yes, but you hadn't built an ark. Why? That's right. He didn't tell you to. God made a covenant with Noah. And that covenant had a condition. Make an ark. We all understand that. But people don't understand it when it comes to other spiritual issues. Like, well, we ought to be observing the Sabbath day. No. Well, don't you believe in obeying God? Yes. Didn't God command the observance of the Sabbath? Yes. But he made that covenant with the nation of Israel. And it was to commemorate their deliverance from Egypt. Might say, well, I don't know why you folks don't use instrumental music. The Old Testament talks about using instrumental music. Doesn't the Bible, don't you believe the Bible? Yes. But I don't live under that covenant. If we can understand this simple illustration in Genesis 6, we ought to be able to understand those other things. That's why understanding covenants and what they are and how they pertain to people can be valuable in our understanding of God's will today. And that's what we prayed about with Michael. Okay. Now, look at Exodus 19. So here we are in the scheme of things. God told Jacob... You go on to Egypt, I'm going to make you a great nation there. The people began to multiply. Pharaoh tried to kill all the baby boys. He was unsuccessful. And so Moses was selected as the deliverer to bring the people out. And God, through his powerful hand, through the plagues that took place, delivered the people from Egyptian bondage. So a nation, we're not sure of the number, 2, maybe 3 million people, marched out of Egypt. But there are other nations in the world. There's the Egyptian nation, for example. But about 3 months later, they come to this mountain called Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb. And that's where we're at in Exodus chapter 19. Look what he says. And you'll note it says in verse 1, in the third month after the sons of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt. So that identifies the people in view right there. Those who came out of Egypt. Now look at verse 4. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now then, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, note it's a conditional covenant. That's another thing people fail to see. The great nation and the land promise were conditional covenants. If you keep my commandments, you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for the earth is mine. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Holy. What does that mean? Set apart. Special. A special nation. And so here is a time when God is taking this one nation and making them especially His nation. Not that He didn't care about other nations. Not that He wasn't involved in other nations. But this is His special nation. Is it because He loved them more and didn't love the others? No, He had a plan. It's back to this overall plan. That nation would be important in the plan with God was going to bring about for your salvation and mine. And he was going to use them to that end. And if they would obey, they would benefit immensely. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 5. So that's Exodus 19. They come to the border of the promised land, as you may recall. And because of their lack of faith, they won't go in. Although two of the spies said, we can take it. 10 of the spies said, we can't. So they disbelieved. They were ready to go back to Egypt. God said, I'm going to punish you. And you're going to wander in the wilderness for 38 years. And out of over 600,000 soldiers, every single one will die but two, Joshua and Caleb. And that happened. But finally, they did come to the promised land. They're in the plains of Moab. Moses preaches this sermon 38 years later. Okay? So, we're in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Look at verse 3. The Lord did not make this covenant. He's talking about the one in Exodus 20, where they were at Mount Horeb. Moses went up in the mountain, got the Ten Commandments. Moses did not make this, the Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but he did make it with their previous descendants. Because 40 years had passed, a lot of their fathers were dead, but their fathers were there when these laws were given at Horeb or Sinai. What does it mean with our fathers? The patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the idea. And you can read the context further previous and you'll see that's the case. So Moses makes a distinction between the patriarchal covenants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and this national covenant. But with us, all of us who are alive here today. What about when they died and their boys? No, they would be included because it's national. That's the idea. It's a national covenant, not the patriarchal covenant. And so on your sheet that we gave you on the chart one, if you have availability to chart one, that's on page 7. You'll see we've got Mount Horeb there. I'm sure you recognized it when you look at the chart. And you probably see Moses down there at the bottom somewhere talking to the people. But anyway, there's Mount Horeb. And you notice what we have at the top? Deuteronomy 5:3. That's the very point that Moses is making right here. So he made this covenant with this nation. All right. So back on our lesson 2, here's this covenant with Israel. And then there's a third covenant we're looking at in this lesson. It's the covenant with Christians. So to be a part of the national covenant, what was required? Lineage. Right? Lineage. You're born into it. Lineage. To be a part of the patriarchal covenant, you are a descendant of the patriarch. Now here's a covenant God makes with Christians. Look at Luke chapter 22 and verse 20. So this is the night of his betrayal. He's instituting the memorial that we'll partake of a little bit later if the Lord is willing. We call it the Lord's Supper. And look what he said in verse 20. In the same way he took the cup after they had eaten, saying, this cup which is poured out for you is the new covenant. Well, that cup wasn't the new covenant. Was it? Metonymy. It represents the new covenant, right? So, when we're talking about covenants, you say, what do I care about this? I'll tell you what, folks, if you care about the covenant that you're going to commemorate when you drink that fruit of the vine, then you care about covenants. Because that's what it is. It's the new covenant. What does he say? In my blood. His death. Blood stands for death. In connection with my death. This covenant, this what God agreed to do for man, could only be possible through death. But it had to be the death of a sinless victim. That's Jesus, the Son of God. That's the gospel news. The gospel news has to do with a covenant that God made. And he pointed to it way back in Genesis 12. Actually, even before that, way back in Genesis 3, God said, here's what I'm going to do. From the woman's seed, I'm going to bring one who's going to defeat Satan. And so, covenants are extremely important to understanding God and His plan for man. Now, turn to Hebrews 8 right quick. Hebrews chapter 8. All I want you to note here in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 7, is there is a first. Now, the word covenant's in italics, but that's what it means. You can read the context. There was a first and a second. There you have what we started out with. The first, that's your Old Testament. A second, your New Testament. So it's right there in the text, and you can read about that here in Hebrews chapter 8. Now, this covenant, turn back to Matthew 28. So Jesus has died now. He's risen from the grave. He's commissioning His apostles to go tell the world about it. And so in Matthew chapter 28 and verse 18, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Now what? Teaching them to observe what I've commanded you. This is a conditional covenant. You don't get baptized, say, oh, I'm done. No, no. This is a conditional covenant. All right, we were prepared for that way back in the first book in the Bible. Unconditional covenants and conditional covenants. This is a conditional covenant. Okay. Now, on your lesson chart number 2, we have a timeline. It's on page 17 of your lesson. You'll see that timeline. I can only introduce it because I'm almost out of time. Talking about time. But there's a time chart there. So you got Adam to Moses. That's generally what we call the patriarchal dispensation. So the word dispensation here means 2,500 years, right? No. It so happens that God's plan for ruling through the patriarchs covers that 2,500 years. And so accommodatively, we talk about that period as the patriarchal dispensation, as these events that we have there from Adam to Moses. Moses, of course, is the one brought the nations to the mount. God said, you're going to be my special nation. And so for the next 1,500 years, there's your Old Testament. And it has to do with this covenant with the nation. We've got it broken down from Moses to Christ. Now, you notice in this section on the Jewish dispensation, it actually goes through Acts 1. You say, why didn't you enter it at Malachi? Because the people that lived under the time that Matthew was talking about, Mark and Luke and John and Acts 1, lived under the Mosaical covenant. That's why. And that explains a lot of things. Like he said, if your brother sins against you, take your gift and go to the altar. How many of you taken your gift and went to the altar? Jesus said that's what you ought to do in Matthew 5. That was a Jewish time. They were still under the national covenant with the Jews. All right, so anyway. And then you have the Christian dispensation from Pentecost till judgment. So far, it's been about 2,000 plus years. Okay, and so I'd encourage you to look at chart 2 and review chart 3 and lesson 3 for our study next time. Again, to remind you that we have additional reading would be helpful, be good for family Bible reading, Hebrews 8, 6 through 10:10. And to review the drill questions. Oh, let me say one more thing, we'll end the class. When I give people these 100 questions, here's what we hope you would do. sit down without a Bible and notes and answer every one you possibly can. You may say, this is discouraging. I can't answer but 25% of them. That's okay. What we want you to do at the end of the course is do the same thing. And if you can answer 75%, now you say, look at here what I've learned. That's the idea. Okay? But here's how you're going to learn them. Drill, drill, drill. Husbands and wives, drill one another. Parents and children, drill one another. Children, ask your parents some of the drill questions. See how they do. Sitting at the table, pick out one of the drill questions you think they can't answer and try that one. But this is a way that you can study the Bible as a family and increase your understanding and knowledge of God's will. Okay, I must end the class here.